FAQ Podcast. Wir haben die Fragen.
I'm not a politician. I'm not an investigator. I do it because I'm a wife who lost my husband, and I just represent life. I represent what any human will do to fight for your child, to fight for your husband, and I never been frightening for doing this.
Herzlich willkommen beim FAQ Podcast. Wir haben die Fragen. Welcome to FAQ Podcast. We have the questions. The podcast where we share with you conversations from our annual forum festival FAQ Bregenzer Wald in Vorarlberg, Austria. This time in English. What is the price of truth? The answer to this frequently asked question weighs particularly heavy on Marina Litvinenko. Alongside her husband, Alexander Litvinenko, a former member of the Russian Secret Service, she witnessed the cruelty of the Putin regime at first hand, up until the murder of her Sasha in London 2006. She recounts their story and her 10-year battle for truth after his death. In conversation with Alexandra Födel-Schmidt, recorded at FAQ Bregenzer Wald in September 2023.
FAQ im Gespräch.
Marina, I want to just briefly mention a few milestones of her life. She was born in 1962, so she's 61. And at the age of 31, she met Alexander Litvinenko. He was at that time already working for the KGB as an intelligence officer. And well, 1 year later, they were married. They got a son, Anatoly. And in 1998, something happened, which was at that time really, rare, unusual, and very brave, because several intelligence officers, and Sasha was one of them, they were giving a press conference in Russia and accusing the organization, the KGB, and the predecessor organization of ordering the murdering of Russian citizens, especially they told the public they have been ordered to kill Boris Berezovsky, who is an oligarch, and then what happened? Sasha was arrested and there was a trial and he spent 10 months in prison and there were several more investigations. And what he has done was, to plan how can we get out of the country. And he told his wife to go with the son and it was in the year 2000, to Spain for vacation. And what Marina didn't know, she would never return back home because he organized to get out of the country via Turkey and he went to the United Kingdom, to Great Britain, and asked his wife and his son to follow him. And from the year 2000 on, they are living now, they have been lived, and she is still living with her son in London. And, that's her personal story. And in the year 2006, something happened. Sasha met some former colleagues in London, and what he didn't knew, that they had not coffee, like in Austria, which is normal, they had tea. At tea time, and at that occasion, a radioactive element, polonium-210, a very expensive poison, was put in his tea. And he struggled for 22 days, and then he died. And I'm sure most of you have this picture in mind, a pale man without any hairs in the hospital bed with this blue typical coat. And, this was Sasha's and Marina's story, and it was the beginning of a bitter fight for justice. And it took her really 10 years, not months, 10 years, to get an investigation in Great Britain. And after that, court said, well, probably Putin was behind everything and ordered the murder of her husband. And in 2006, it was really not usual to talk about Putin as a criminal, because at that time he was regarded as a statesman. He was welcomed on global stages everywhere. And still, Marina fights and calls out for justice. And, she is the person who can tell us more about also what is going on in the opposition scene today. So, welcome, Marina, on stage here in Bregenzerwald.
Guten Morgen. Ich würde gerne Deutsch sprechen. Leider ist mein Deutsch gut nicht genau. I will speak English. I'm sorry. Thank you very much, Alexandra, for introduction and say in a few words of this long story and changing my life forever from being a dance teacher in Russia and became a person who fight for justice in the UK for her husband, for my husband, and now talking more about Russia, about relationship between Russia, UK, and other countries, discussing about opposition. Sometimes I received a very weird questions, talking about spies, or like recently was a story, three Bulgarian spies were discovered in UK, and it was immediately people from BBC and other TV production called me and asking, Marina, could you tell something about Bulgarian spies? Okay, it's another agenda talking about this world, but it's not my true story. I better speak about how never give up and every time motivate, not by hateness, but by love. And when I was asking, are you doing because you hate your country or you hate Putin? It's not. It was every time in my mind when my late husband, Alexander, asked him, Marina, please, could you talk to the world for what happened to us? He believed if I say this, it might be never happen to another people, to another families. Unfortunately, for what happened now to Russia and to Ukraine and to other world, we can see it happened. And my story, I believed it was my own experience, when I should leave my country, when I should left behind my family, my parents. But I thought my example and example of my family might be as alert, just tried to stop, maybe not Putin directly, but maybe happened something bad. But now I can see how my story, it's multiplied. talking about experience to go to see my husband in prison, it was quite unique. Because many, many people were arrested for, you can't call even a crime. You just simply have your opinion, what you can say, you can write, and you would be immediately arrested and then sentenced. And now many people have to go to prison for 6, 8, and even 20 years. And this is what has happened to Russia, and I feel very, very sad for what is happening. But most tragedy happening now to Ukraine and to Ukrainian people. Could I believe more than a year and a half it might happen? Really not. A day when the war started, I was in Ukraine. I came to Ukraine just a week before this war started. I knew something is not right happening in a border between Russia and Ukraine, but I couldn't believe one day it would be a real war. A day 24th of February, when I woke up and I received this news, Russians started bombing Kyiv, Kharkiv, and in other cities. I was just, no, it's not true, but it was true. I stayed not in dangerous place. I stayed in the west of Ukraine, in Karpaty, and I knew I'm safe. But in one day, I started to see how country changed, even in this safe place. So many refugees came from east of Ukraine, tried to get out to save children and women from these all bombings. And this was just a few days in the beginning. But can you imagine what is happening now? How many people had to left Ukraine just to save families? A week before, my husband, Alexander Litvinenko, was deadly poisoned. He put an article in his website when he said, in a time when all world tried to find a virtual terrorist, he talked about Bin Laden, and at the same time, much worse enemy rise his power behind the Kremlin wall. If you not stop him, he will start the war, and a million people will die.
So this was in 2006, and just a few days before he died, your husband has written a statement. So imagine he was lying in hospital knowing, well, there might be no help, and then he issued a statement, and I know you know a little bit German, so I'm going to read it in German, because I think it's important that you get the message. Sie werden es vielleicht schaffen, einen Mann zum Schweigen zu bringen, aber der Protest aus aller Welt, Herr Putin, wird für den Rest des Lebens in Ihren Ohren nachhallen. Möge Gott Ihnen vergeben, was Sie getan haben. Nicht nur mir angetan haben, sondern dem geliebten Russland und seinem Volk. So, lying in his deathbed, he was appealing directly Putin. When we move back in your personal lifetime, he or his life line. So, Sasha had met Putin years before in Moscow, in the KGB, and at that time he thought that Putin would be a reformer, that he would be able to change something, and he has talked to him directly.
First of all, I would like to be precise, and it's not KGB anymore. I know sound is very special. KGB people knows about this organization as the most frightening. But in 1991, when Soviet Union was collapsed and now never exists, we have Russia and many different countries. They before were in Soviet Union, but now it's independent countries. And KGB was reformed. And this was some hope with the reformation of KGB. It's going to be a new country. And My husband Sasha joined this quota office when it was already no KGB. I mean, he never been as a
KGB. It was FSB. Yeah.
Yes, and it was a few names before it became well known for now FSB. And in 1998, when this internal investigation, what you mentioned before press conference in 1998 happened, and former director of FSB resigned, and new one became Putin. And this was time when Alexander still believed of change of this system. He knew about corruption, he knew about this even more serious crime. And meeting Putin, it was a suggestion to meet Putin as a new director of FSB and discussed about this. Alexander knew Putin is not a person who will make any change. He was from St. Petersburg, and he had a lot of links with organized crime already. Why I mention this right now? Putin became president of Russia with a very serious background, and not only as a security service, and at a lot of criminality, at a lot of connection with organized crime. And meeting Putin was crucial, because Alexander just shows to Putin all what he knows, and it makes him as a target after that. Because it was not only press conference why he was punished and put to prison, and this meeting to show his knowledge for what he knows about this corruption system and FSB.
And has he talked at home about Putin, and has he called him a criminal at home?
When he after meeting Putin, he was, my husband was a little bit confused. He didn't see any strong man in front of him. He said his handshake was very soft, and he didn't look to Sasha's eyes during the talk. And actually, we can see it now. Mm. It's when Putin is talking, he's always looking down, but not directly. And he didn't see maybe dangerous from Putin at that time, because he didn't look as a strong personality.
And this was then the reason why they organized this famous press conference in 1998. So just a few months after he has talked to Putin, so he lost immediately his faith in this person that Putin would change anything for the better.
Yes, he didn't believe to Putin as a person who might reform anything, but many people in Russia still believe everything that happened in 1991, it's going just forward. It's not going to be back. It's going to be back to Soviet system. It's not going to be to all these restrictions. And my husband, Sasha, believed is this another power, not only security service. And if you try to fight against security service, you might have support from business, from politicians. But unfortunately, it was illusion.
Knew Sasha that he is in danger, even in Great Britain. You got political silence. You became British citizen. Did he know that he exposed himself? I think his, one of his last articles in Excel was saying that Putin is responsible for the murder of Anna Politkovskaya, the journalist. I think this was one of the last public appearances of Sasha.
Yes. Moving to UK was not planning, not for me, not even for Alexander. When we met in Turkey and discussing where we're going to next, first plan was going to United States. And what was reason, we met some lawyers, immigration lawyers, and even more, we went to American embassy
in Turkey.
In Turkey, in Ankara. But we've been asking to wait because in the same time it was a presidential election and George Bush and Gore being fighting for what in Stadt Florida, and Americans were not so much concentrated to take somebody as a political refugee. But being in Turkey was quite dangerous, and we moved to Istanbul and still discussing where to go. Why not to United Kingdom in the first place? Because Tony Blair didn't want to have any problems. He still have a very good relationship to Vladimir Putin. They called each other as a friends, and it was Tony Blair who introduced to international club Vladimir Putin as a new president, as a very promising. Of course, we remember Yeltsin, old, ill, sometimes or always drunk. It was not a very good example of president of Russia. And on his background, Putin was a young, sporty, speaking German, and this was a lot of things for Putin. And when it was discussion, maybe some Russian will ask political asylum in UK, Tony Blair was so much against. And when we landed in London at the end, I think it was some kind of headache for him. And we received political asylum not straight, not even in months. We should wait almost 11 months. And it was quite nervous because Sasha was every time thinking he might be extradited. But after receiving political asylum in UK, it looks like you are in an island, you under protection of the Queen, you are in kingdom. It's not Sasha was a naive, but this was kind of safety feeling being in UK.
So after Sasha was poisoned, it took you, I mentioned that already, 10 years to get a proper investigation because the British authorities, well, refused to touch on this issue. They knew it would be complicated. Well, there would be some diplomatic problems. So what kept you in this long period to go on, to fight, to find lawyers? And it was also, well, a financial question because the burden was, well, not easy to bear, I guess.
I would correct you a little bit because it's not so simple. This is different part of this story. Who been in my side and who was not in the opposite side, but tried to prevent. I wasn't talking about British government. But police, Scotland Yard, the justice system, they've been on my side. And I don't know why, but I was really lucky every time meeting people who decide to do this. Even pro bono, like my lawyer, when I say to him, unfortunately, I can't pay you because we lost financial support. And he is a very high profile lawyer in UK, Ben Emerson. But he told me, Marina, I would be the last person who will leave you. Because everybody been determined to bring the story to public. And when police investigated this case, they always tried to be outside of political discussion. And when they asked them, could you prove is the Russian state behind of this crime? They always say, no, we can't say this. We investigated this crime, they discovered polonium, but it's not them who might blame Russia of committing this crime. It takes me 5 years since 2006 to give them more chance to investigate better. Why? Because it was a very strong link from Germany. In Hamburg, when second suspect, Dmitry Kovtun, traveled from Hamburg to London, they found a trace of polonium. And this was investigation in Germany for 2 years, but they closed this case. I don't know for what reason, but they said this because it should be closed. But we have some extra evidence what gives police to make this case like very, very proper investigated, is using all scientific help from everywhere. And 2010, 2011, and other things, I will tell you, now we included politics. When I'm meeting politicians in UK, they still believe Russia might change. In 2008, it would be last period of sentence for, sentence, it would be better sentence, but for Putin to be president of Russia. And after that, democratical election, and it's going to be a different president. And they believed it might change. And extradition, Lugovoy might happen, and proper justice.
Yeah, I think we have to mention who is, you mentioned Lugovoy.
Lugovoy and Kovtun, these two men who my husband met 1st of November, and it was proved they used this radioactive polonium and they put it to Teapot and what Sasha had.
And one of them became then later a member of the Russian parliament.
Yes.
They were never, yeah.
And it's happened straight after he was being named as a main suspect. He became immediately a member of parliament, like a grated. And this was, I tried to explain why it took so long. It was not just like a whole system was against me. And when we call for inquest, is this kind of justice system in UK, where can you take a case without suspects, but you can see all evidence, all what police found it, and why we call these people the suspects. But we started to fight with my lawyers against British government because they didn't want to make this process public. They wanted to close it. They wanted not allowed press to be in this process. And how does it call? To make it narrow. Just discussing about cause of death, but not who behind of this. But what we actually wanted, to bring this case to public and discuss who behind of this crime. And this takes some years. After that, after 2011, with changing judge and moving from inquest to public inquiry. I just don't want to make you be tired to listen to this all long process. It might be another book to write about. But and actually in Very Expensive Poison, Luke Harding made a brilliant job to write this all about. And finally, we get public inquiry. But it wasn't easy. I needed to take Theresa May, who was a head of Home Office that time, not a prime minister, to the court because she refused to give me my right for public inquiry. And this was exactly what you mentioned. One point was it might destroy a relationship with another country. I don't know what was it in another country. Mm.
But at the end, the judge said, well, probably Putin is behind. When was, or was there a moment when you decided, well, the only thing I have to do is to speak out in public, to publish a book, Death of a Dissident, together with Alex Goldfarb, that that's your legacy, your duty to speak out and to speak out directly and to repeat in public, Putin is a criminal, knowing that you put yourself in danger.
I've never felt I'm in danger because I'm not a politician, I'm not an investigator. I do it because I'm a wife who lost my husband, and everything what I'm saying is true. And because people still be interested of listening this and asking me for what happening, I'm open for this. And for all this time, I've never felt any problem, not in UK, not in my travel, not in my speeches where I'm going to, hopefully. And maybe because I have a different route and I just represent life. I represent what any human will do to fight for your child, to fight for your husband. And I never been frightening for doing this.
But it's a high price which you have to pay because, well, when you travel, it's not, you not travel with your real name. We have especially security here. You might have recognized that. You're not officially part of the Russian opposition, but nevertheless, with your way of discussing the issue, showing the Putin system, talking about openly about the mafia state, that's brave and courageous.
It's exactly what you said. It's a legacy of Sasha, of my husband. I can't be as professional as he was. He might be more helpful to discover all this communication between Russian state people with crime people. I can't do it. But because of my real story helps me to take attention to very serious things what happened to Russia, to Russian people. And I realize people listening to this, and I just decide it's absolutely right things to do.
But when we follow the news a few years after what happened to your husband, there was the Skripal case in Great Britain. And, Navalny was poisoned within Russia. So this system is still, working, it seems, to use poison, to eliminate opponents.
It's exactly what makes me feel very disappointed. To bring a case of my husband to the court and make it very public and receive this verdict with the name of Putin, director of FSB, Patrushev, didn't make people to understand how the Putin system is dangerous. And when Skripal happened in 2018, I was really devastated because not only Skripal and his daughter were attempted to poison. In few months, is a British citizen, it's a woman, George, in the same city, Salisbury, just died because Novichok, this is nerve agent, was in a perfume bottle. And this innocent woman just used it and died. And this is exactly how these people reckless and how they will do anything without thinking how many other people could die. And actually what they are doing now in Ukraine, it's the same.
And Novichok was used against Navalny as well. And another thing we see is this form of officially death, which are officially declared as suicides. And it also happened to a man which was heavily involved in Sasha's case, to Mr. Berezovsky. He, it was said, committed suicide in London, but you never believed that.
I've never believed, and even more, one quite interesting agency, BuzzFeed, maybe some young people particularly knows this investigative agency, they found more than 10 deaths in London. They found they are linked to each other, and they linked to Russia, and this not only Russian citizens, and most of them just suspected. I mean, and unexplained. And one of these deaths is Boris Berezovsky as well. He died in 2013 in his house after losing his case against Abramovich. And somebody decided he was so much depressed and devastated. But I think it was a good time to kill person and say it because he was depressed and devastated. It's not just my opinion, but police investigated this case as suicide. But in Quest, what I said, this is open, like research of evidence, didn't find is this just a suicide. And now we have an open verdict. Boris Berezovsky might be killed, or maybe he committed suicide.
And this was 10 years ago.
Yes.
And in the last few weeks, there were a lot of public discussions about, well, the Wagner clan, and what happened to the boss of the Wagner clan. So do you think this was a special mission ordered by Putin, who said, no, I'm not responsible?
Of course, Prigozhin.
Prigozhin.
Yes, of course, Prigozhin, head of Wagner, now disappeared from our attention, and many people believed he was killed. And I'm sure it was agreement with Putin, because for what Prigozhin did in June, just 2 months before, we believe he was killed. He humiliated Putin. He did show he has a power to do something different. And everybody knew he would be punished. Yes.
But this was not just him. There were also other passengers on the planes, not only Prigozhin.
But
so it doesn't matter.
But it's exactly for what I said. They don't take any care about anybody around. If there could be used polonium and somebody would be poisoned, but less than my husband. Again, they just don't care. And when they used Novichok, this British woman died. And when they used against Navalny, again, it might be somebody felt not so good. These people don't care.
But is it just Putin? Because I remember you said during our talk at the Burgtheater, well, it doesn't matter if Putin disappears, the system is still in charge.
Yes, when we're talking about Russia now, it's more like a Putin system. But this system built us a vertical. And of course, when Putin on the top of this vertical, it's quite strong for now. But if you take Putin out from top, we don't know how this vertical will survive. But people who surrounded him, they are maybe not be possible to keep this vertical as a Putin. And this is all unpredictable, who might came after Putin. But I think it's a very wrong message. If not Putin, it would be somebody worse. But my question, who might be worse than Putin after this war in Ukraine? Nobody. And now it looks like anybody, but not Putin.
But Western politicians are still thinking there might be some form of democratic change. Today there are elections on a regional level in Russia. So do you see any figure who would be would have the chance to get the next leader? Who is the leader of the opposition? Is it Navalny, or is there anybody else living in exile?
Until Putin in charge, is not any democratic election at all. And everything what is happening now in Russia is farce. And people might show they're going to elect somebody, but it's everything already done. If it's not Putin for now, I might say it might be even more difficult period for Russia, because it's time of the war. And now when a military office in charge and very strong, it's a very likely might be any, not a junta, not a dictator, because it's never happened to Russia before, but it might be charged somebody from military office like this. And before it became better, like a democratical election and people from opposition became a leader of new Russia, it takes time. But it should happen because anybody who came now after Putin will ask for peace and for negotiation with the West. For what is doing Putin now, he doesn't happy to negotiate because he doesn't want to show he's weak and he need to be just put down. And any other person, I'm sure, will start this process of negotiation and peace.
But from a Western perspective, I have to admit, nobody knows exactly how many Russian soldiers have died, but there must have been thousands, and there are families. But still, at least from, I say it again, from a Western perspective, there is not a lot of, at least in the public, disappointment or outrage, nothing at all.
I would mention two moments. First of all, Russia doesn't have experience of democracy at all. It was a very short period of time in the 80s when Gorbachev started perestroika, glasnost, and people started to believe they might live in a different world, in a different country. And end of 80s, before 90s, it was a lot of protest meetings, like 100,000 people came outside. It's never happened in the new Russia at all. Never new opposition was able to bring people to this kind of protest or demonstration. But after 1993, people became very much disappointed. And they've been not ready for these difficulties with economy. People were equivalent poor, but they became even more poorer because this is all changed to go from state control economy to capitalism wasn't easy. And people were very much disappointed, particularly generation of my parents, my generation, and young people been the same, not so very well prepared for new life. And when this need to be now more active, we have not enough people because young people, they tried to do this, to follow Alexei Navalny, to go to this protest, but it's not so integrated. And any punishment just to go outside and to say any disagreement with state might cost you a few years in prison easily. And it shows every time on TV, and people afraid. And when you ask people, why are you so silent? Why are you not saying against the war in Ukraine? You understand why? Because they would be easily sent to prison. And this is another thing what we said, Russia is an aging society. And aging people, old people, they're better for stability, even like that with Putin. Because they, Putin's government always tried to present only this time under Putin's era, people were so wealthy, so comforted. They could travel to abroad, they could buy very luxury cars. But it was not because of Putin, it's reforms what been provided before Putin. And Putin just became successor of this reform. And of course, very high price of oil and gas. Why have they been this so wealthy for all this year? But not this money been invested to proper, to economy. And now it's all dependency from oil and gas. And new sanctions just shows one day it would be very bad period of time for Russia. But people still be passive and afraid to be active. What I said, maybe just like last one, we don't have society. We don't have a democratical society yet, unfortunately.
You mentioned the sanctions. 11 packages were announced. And, I think the EU countries thought there might be a bigger effect. Why is still, at least it seems, the Russian economy so strong and robust?
First of all, sanctions couldn't make this very quick effect. And this is why this problem. Sanctions been started because of this war in Ukraine. And everybody believed it need to be immediate effect. But of course, it didn't happen. It might happen in few years. Maybe in 2025, economy of Russia would be suffered a lot. But for now, it still have some kind of reserve. But sanctions for me was more just like to show we are against the war, we need to react, and we do these sanctions. But help to Ukraine, it was much slow. And this is all disproportion. Helping to Ukraine to fight and finish this war, it would be more effective and much faster happened. But sanctions against Russia, it's slow moving. And it doesn't help now to fight Ukraine against Russia.
And you mentioned already the gas and oil exports. And we have to talk about Austria as well. Because I know that you know about the discussion here, because you have asked me that. Is it really true that Austria relies, gets 55% of the gas still from Russia? And I said, yes. And she also followed the debate which took place in the last few days. I'm sure you're familiar with that the EU representative Martin Selmayr, during a public debate, he said, that's Blutgeld. So what do you think about Austria's position and also, well, the official position?
But I think it's absolutely right, even being fascinating of being here and particularly in this beautiful area and see how the life is absolutely amazing, it's nature, but be critical. I think it's normal to be critical. It's really difficult to accept when you pay for this gas and this money going directly to the war. It's not going to ordinary Russian. It doesn't improve their life at all. It's going to kill Ukrainian children, Ukrainian women, destroy the cities, and this is damaging. I know all politicians will say we are thinking about our country, we are thinking about our citizens, but a war affected all of us. And what is happening between Russia and Ukraine is not a local conflict at all. It's a series, a war of civilization. And Ukraine fighting for this freedom, for democracy, for right to be independent, and even just to save their identification. And I think it's very important to support and make this not possible to use your money to kill people.
So this is an appeal to the Austrian government, but also to partly state-owned companies who are responsible for that and should find some replacement from your perspective. And we should also talk about Karin Kneißl. Well, you know more about her status as a refugee in Russia?
Yes, it was absolutely shocking when I read about this story. Of course, it's not beginning. In the beginning, when Putin was unexpected guest on her wedding ceremony, can you believe it? President of Russia with the highest security in the world coming unexpectedly to the wedding ceremony, not, of course, this was all. And for what happening to her, I don't know. Maybe she's the most hated person in Austria now. Why she's in Russia? Why she calls herself a refugee? I don't know. But it's a shame. It's a shame when politicians, their own country, became a paid, I would say, paid agent of Russia. It's like that. It didn't happen after she or Schröder finished their political career. It's all started before.
Schröder, the former German chancellor. Yeah.
Yes, and they all became part of Russian business elite.
But why do you think Putin has joined her wedding? It was just in the middle of, nowhere in the south of Austria. So, Putin was traveling to this particular wedding. Why? He must have something in mind. And does it have to do something with the Austrian position within the European Union, trying to manipulate the rest of the countries?
Everything what is doing Putin, it's a make a chaos. He can manipulate in the world, just produce this chaos. And every time when people just became interrupted or some local conflict started, Putin feels very good and satisfied. And maybe making this a visit or just like a pointed, I'm here, I'm controlling Austrian politics, I'm so closed. I don't know what this message sent it to who, but every time when it's this discussion, what Putin might think and what in his mind, it's really difficult, because I don't think this person understands where he lives. Even Angela Merkel said many years ago, he lives in his own world. He's insane. And it's true.
So to wrap up this talk and to bring it back to the very personal level, we have talked a lot about Sasha, about you. We have not talked so much about your son, Anatoly. He was 6 when he, had not voluntary, was forced to leave his country. He was 12 when his father died. He is now 29. He has started finding his own way, which was not easy with all your experiences.
Yes, it's when we're talking about price, this is always when you need to make a choice in your life, even a very simple choice to buy red or green or buy this or buy this, it's always choice. One day I make this choice to leave Russia, but Anatoly, our son who was 6 years old, he didn't have this choice. He just needed to go whereas his mother and father decided to leave. And I always asked myself, was it right? Because my mother and my father stayed in Russia. It means Anatoly couldn't see his grandparents. It's very sad. And occasionally they could come to London, but it's not as a normal relationship. And this is price and this is choice. And when Anatoly being and he's 12, it's never easy age for teenager, and particularly a moment when his father was killed and all publicity all around. I even didn't realize how it traumatized him, because he tried to look a normal as a child, but it was a big trauma inside. But helpfully, it was very good school, supported him, it was good people around, and he helped himself too. He tried to painting something and really surprised me, but I realized later it was like kind of his therapy. And of course he dropped all this after he finished his school. He started to write, he finished University of London, and this was not like a specific job. because you need to take something extra. But after doing some practice with law firm and doing job with a journalist, he find his way. He's working for a law firm. And I think his father would be happy to see him. Because it was only always for two of us, for Sasha and for me, when he said, Marina, I know it's a difficult to change life in your certain age, but for our son, he will live in a freedom country and he will have a brighter future. For what said Sasha. And I promised to him I will do it for our son, and I hope Sasha would be happy.
Thank you, Marina. Yes, the price was high, so thank you, Marina, for sharing your personal story and your insights with us. Thank you so much, and thank you that you have been here and listen to her and to her story. Thank you so much. Im Burgtheater haben Sie zumindest angekündigt im Casino, dass das Theaterstück ein sehr teures Gift auch in der kommenden Saison nochmal zu sehen sein wird, wer die Chance hat. Es lohnt sich. Und wer noch mehr wissen will, dem seien die beiden Bücher empfohlen. Von Luke Harding, A Very Expensive Poison und Death of a Dissident, an dem Marina selbst mitgeschrieben hat. Schönen Nachmittag noch.
Vielen Dank.
Dieser Podcast wurde produziert von Friendship Is.
What the fuck?